Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm managing editor Matt Goldberg, and with me today are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
And Dave Trumbull.
Happy New Year.
Yes, we will be talking about the films of 2014 and how this is a remarkably underwhelming year, at least at first glance. Because the thing is that we know what's mostly coming. It's not till the end of the year that the final, like the independent films that come out and surprise people, or at least the festivals start rolling. We go to Sundance in a couple weeks, and we have no idea. There could be great movies there that surprise us. But from the perspective of these are movies with set release dates, and keep in mind that Sundance films have to get picked up and then have release dates set for them. So we're just talking about the calendar as it stands now. And as it stands now, well, Adam, you put together that 2014 preview, and you were saying that you struggled to find, what, just 40 films to put on there?
I did. It was 25. And it, oh, I mean, it was more of a preview of, like, here's the blockbusters that we have on tap. But the thing that stuck out to me is that there's no Man of Steel. There's no big property that we have no idea about. There's a bunch of, like, sequels and reboots that, like, you know, Michael Bay's rebooting his own franchise with Transformers. We know what that's going to look like. We know what X-Men Days of Future Past is going to look like. I mean, we've seen Bryan Singer. There just aren't many unknowns. I mean, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. These are still kind of exciting properties, but there's nothing that's like a big, exciting, like, unknown.
I honestly forgot that another Transformers movie was coming out this year until, like, Russ Fisher over at Slash Film, like, he did a 2014 preview, and apparently, like, people were mad at him that he didn't include Transformers and Night at the Museum, and I forgot that those were both coming out this year.
They're on the way.
I mean, really, when I think about 2014, really the only movie, like the big movie that pops in my head is X-Men Days of Future Past, because I'm really excited for it. And then it's like, and then when things start getting, like, you give me another few seconds, like, okay, I'm excited for Captain America, and I'm certainly excited for Guardians of the Galaxy. But then again, and then you push me to think even further, and it's like, was there anything outside of comic book movies? I'm like,
Godzilla, that's it. That's
yeah.
It.
Well, even Godzilla, I mean, I'm interested in Godzilla, for sure, but to me, that's, I'm not someone who's head over heels with Gareth Edwards' first film, Monsters. Like, it's good, but I have some issues with it. It certainly as a film that's like looks amazing on a shoestring budget, absolutely. And I think from the trailer we saw that Godzilla is going to probably have some amazing visuals. But again, for me, it's like, yeah, that's definitely could be good. I mean, I'd put it on this on the optimistic side of the summer. I would, but even then, it's like, what else do we got? Like, I'm looking ahead. It's like, oh, there's the RoboCop reboot or remake reboot. Who gives a shit? I don't. I don't. That movie doesn't look good.
Pompeii, come on.
Pompeii
and 300 Rise of an Empire.
The 300
opening
sequel that
one
asked
weekend.
For.
Yeah,
The Seventh Son, which has been delayed 800 times.
No, that's 2015 now.
Yeah, that got pushed.
That got pushed to 2015?
Yep.
I am never going to have to publish that set visit. I went to the set in 2012, and I have the interviews. Like, I still have the audio, and I think I wrote a set visit. It doesn't matter. I have notes, and I can remember what we did, which was, I can't say it because it's under embargo, but who knows if that film will ever come out. I had no idea.
They move it back, though, because Universal picked it up and they had Fast and Furious 7 for 2014, but right. I wouldn't be surprised if they move Seventh Son back into 2014 now that they had to push Fast and Furious.
They got to be leery, though. I mean, with the, because 47 Ronin was one of their, were they just distributors on that? I'm not sure, but either way.
That was their movie. No, that was their movie.
That was their
yeah.
movie, and that's a huge write down for that. So they got to be kind of nervous about what the hell to do with that one, too. I don't think it's going to come out, you know, if it comes out, it's going to have to move into like a summer slot or something, because I don't think they'll have it open.
And they were not ready. I mean, that thing was set for, what, January of this year, right?
It's moved around so much, I don't even know anymore.
It was, yeah. No, it was originally last October or November, and then Legendary parted with Warner Brothers and took Seventh Son with them, and then Legendary signed up with Universal. So Warner Brothers had it slated for like last fall, and then when Warner Brothers and Legendary split, Warner Brothers wasn't releasing it anymore, and then Universal picked it up, and they were like, all right, we'll probably see it in a few months, and they're like,
yeah,
oh, wait,
even,
no.
It got to the point where they were releasing at least one trailer for it, I remember seeing.
So, yeah, I mean, there was a trailer for it, and we saw, like, at Comic-Con, we saw footage for it. And it really, like, honestly, I would boil it down to Jeff Bridges, like, man, it's really cool, I got to be in a fantasy movie.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
The gist of it, like, Jeff Bridges wanted to do this. Okay, like, and basically I think that's the same mentality between RIPD, is just Jeff Bridges wants to have fun, so Jeff Bridges gets to have fun. That really seems to be the extent of it.
Up until he's in The Giver, and then all fun.
Up until he's in The Giver, which is a film he's been attached to for decades.
Yeah, that's coming
I used to work for the, to give you an idea of how long this is, I did an, in college, I did an internship with the company that holds the rights to The Giver. Like, not the major studio, but On Screen Entertainment, which had just, clung to those rights. He was still on board at that point, and I'm glad. And I mean, he's been on so long. I think he was supposed to play like a younger role, and now he's attached. Now he's playing the actual Giver.
So
that's
I
how long
it was
he.
Just, they were just waiting for the for him to age into the role.
No, he's been there forever. And look, I'm glad. I mean, they've what they've filmed that now, right?
That's coming out August 15th.
Okay,
I think they're filming it now.
Either way, it's a reality. It's finally
it's
a reality.
State, so.
That's the thing. You wait long enough, and hell, you know, we got Secret Life of Walter Mitty, get The Giver. One day we'll get a Confederacy of Dunces. Of course, that one is even, I mean, Jesus, doubtful. And you know what? I'm okay with that. I am perfectly fine without an adaptation of Confederacy of Dunces in my life. But, you know, also the reason we're talking about 2014 today is none of us saw... at least I didn't see Paranormal Activity, the marked ones. I don't know about you guys.
No, missed that one.
I have a proud streak of not seeing the Paranormal Activity movies, so I got that going for me.
You get to miss two this year, so that's fun. That's fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I get to extend.
I only saw the first one, and I was like, not for me.
Yeah.
I understand how it can be, like, scary. I understand. I know people who are like, oh, shit, that scares the hell out of me. But it's a certain kind of person that it gets to. But, like, looking over January, like, even Jack Ryan, I just, like, I wasn't excited for that in 2013, and now it's in 2014.
See, I'm looking forward to that one just because I want to see how Chris Pine kind of takes on that role, and if he can handle, if he can shoulder that franchise. And that way it'll kind of break him out from Star Trek. He'll do a little bit of different stuff, but I just want to see how they do with it, especially with Kenneth Branagh behind the camera and in front of it. So I'm curious about that one.
Yeah, I've always felt that Jack Ryan's kind of an uninteresting character. I like Hunt for Red October, but for the most part, he's a desk jockey, and they're like, you now have to go do things. I'm like,
it's like it looks like they're doing in this one, too. He's basically like freshly turned into a field operative.
It's basically just younger
it's
Jack
his origin,
Ryan.
More or less.
It's an origin story.
Yeah.
Well, I loved the older ones, and I love Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger. The only thing that gives me pause on this one is Branagh, because I didn't really love his Thor stuff, but so we'll see if there are any canted angles, Dutch angles in this one.
In the trailer, the one thing that bothers me, and there's only one trailer and I've seen it like 800 times because it plays in front of every movie I see, is the he goes, it's he's like a super intelligent villain, right? And you know, he has to match wits with the brilliant Jack Ryan. And in the trailer, he's like, you think this is game, Jack? And it's like, you motherfucker, you have to be fluent in English.
Yeah, it's a problem anytime somebody slaps on a Russian accent. Just you lose all sort of credibility.
You lose words in between.
Yeah.
You lose connecting words. You can't, it's like, I don't got time for the indefinite article here. I'm too evil. I gotta move things along.
Yeah, that and the relationship angle of the movie are my two kind of sticking points that I'm worried it's just going to devolve into something generic.
I wonder if it's going to be distracting to hear Keira Knightley in an American accent, because I've never heard her do one before.
I just think she might be distracting in general, because I just don't know how they're going to play that up. I mean, they released an extended clip that just showed one of the earlier fight scenes. And that was kind of interesting, because they showed him dealing with like repercussions from the fight scene, which you don't see too often. It's usually just kill a guy, get out of there, and move on to the next thing. So that was interesting, but they haven't sold me on the relationship angle yet. So we'll see in about 2 weeks.
I'm totally on board with the Kevin Costner resurgence, though.
The Costner songs.
Yeah, he's got like 5 movies coming out this year.
Yeah, it's. I remember I talked with him. Like, I interviewed him like back when Mr. Brooks came out. I did like a phone interview with him, and he made an interesting point. Like, the thing is he doesn't do sequels, and he's still not. Like, he's not. He doesn't do 2 films in the same franchise. Yeah. Now I don't know if that's going to change with the Jack Ryan stuff. But I have to admire that. Like, he keeps wanting to do different things. And yeah, he hit a serious slump. But it seems like, yeah, he seems to have found a better niche in, like, some supporting roles. And then it'll be like, well, how is 3 Days to Kill?
Yeah, he's channeling some, like, Liam Neeson in that. So that's an interesting call there. We'll see. We'll see how that one is.
Yeah. I like Costner. I got nothing against the dude. I wish he'd make another Western. I think Open Range is a solid film. Or and then Draft Day. I was sitting next to someone who, when I went to see Wolf of Wall Street, I was sitting next to a friend. He looked. We saw the trailer for Draft Day. He's like, "That's so stupid. That's not based on a true story." I'm like, "No." And it's like, "Well, what's the point?" I'm like, "Because it's interesting to see a draft process." I don't know. I'm interested.
Yeah.
I think it looks good.
Nah,
but
I'll pass
any.
On that one.
Yeah. Anti football.
I'm watching it right now on mute.
Oh shit. Let's just all do that. Let's just start calling the Packers Niners game. Oh man. Rodgers is so on. But like we were able to form our quarter most anticipated list. Like I would say that the stuff I'm looking forward to in the first quarter, I'm really looking forward to. Like Wild Horses could not keep me away from the Lego movie. I am so freaking excited for that. And because everything I've seen, I enjoy. Like, there hasn't been, like, one false beat where I'm like, I don't know. I'm just like, there's Abraham Lincoln.
They had me a flying Abraham Lincoln.
Flying Abraham Lincoln. But there's so many good jokes. Like, to the invisible jet! And it just nothing explodes. Oh, my. I don't know. Like, their humor is just, like, on my wavelength. I recommend Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs to people. I recommend 21 Jump Street. I'm actually a little wary of 22 Jump Street, though. You think it's going to be fun? Because that trailer was like a little, I don't know, it seems.
From talking to the guys on set, I think it's going to be fun.
All right.
Yeah,
I can't say too much more, but yeah.
I have faith in them. That's what I'm saying. The trailer didn't blow me away like the trailer did for 21 Jump Street. Maybe that was partially because I didn't I kind of knew what to expect because, A, I liked the idea of an R-rated reboot or adaptation, and then I liked them from Cloudy. So, but this, I'm obviously like, this is still going to be, 22 Jump Street is still going to be one of my most anticipated of the year. Basically anything those guys do from now on until like they just hit a serious slump, because I have just enjoyed their movies so much.
And they're savvy enough to know what to do and how to kind of dance around the pitfalls of a sequel too, and they're playing with those conventions too, so I really think they're going to be okay with that.
And I would also say, like, there's some stuff coming up. Like, I already have 2014 films that would probably be in my top, like, that have to be dethroned from my top 10 already. Like, because I saw them at TIFF, and, like, Jodorowsky's Dune is amazing. The Double is amazing. Dom Hemingway is amazing. And all of those, and they weren't on my top 10 of 2013 list because they don't come out till this year. And it's like, they're on my top, they're, like, on my best list, but you haven't seen them, so we can't really have a discussion there, you know? So if you're listening to this podcast, though, keep an eye out for those three movies, because they are...
the F-word, which is great.
Oh, the F-word is also a lot of fun. Yes, that is also a good one.
The only one I can claim that I saw at TIFF that isn't out yet, that I was like, oh, I really like this movie. It's Michael Dowse, who did Goon. It's his next film. It's Daniel Radcliffe and Zoe Kazan, and it's really, really funny.
Adam Driver, scene-stealing.
He's amazing.
We were already Adam and I were quoting it on the way out of the theater, like some of his lines.
Driver's just is the best delivery. It's so good.
So again, so there's some stuff that we know is on the horizon.
Noah, and, I think is the big of the first quarter. That's the big question mark. I think that's the one everyone's looking towards and kind of interested to see how that turns out. Because that's Jeremy Beeks did something on passion projects and how a lot of times, you know, directors have their one big passion project that they've been planning for decades and decades, and it doesn't always turn out well just because they've been thinking about it so long. And this is Aronofsky's. Like, he's been wanting to make Noah for forever.
Yep, Noah is. And I got to say, like, those, I mean, and already, like, I mean, I love Aronofsky unequivocally. And Noah is just seems to be, it's a hard sell. And I think that's why those trailers are sort of, and then the thing that I guess is more concerning is like the behind the scenes wrangling and sort of like, and I don't know what that extent is to. Maybe it's been blown up. Adam, do you think it's like a super chaotic thing or just? like normal
kind of. For Noah, I have no clue, honestly. I don't really know too much about the behind the scenes thing, and that one's not even really on my radar. Like, I know it's coming out. I didn't realize it was opening so early. It's end of March that's opening. So I don't know. I expect to see a push for that in the coming months.
Well, for those that have, I know that some people have read the script and some people read the graphic novel, and I know it's, the trailers look really traditional. It looks like very straightforward, but I know that there is a lot of crazy that I think it was someone who, I think it was either Devin or Drew tweeted, like, man, they're hiding a lot of crazy in that Noah trailer. Because I know there's like 8 foot tall fallen angels called Wanderers or something, 6 foot tall.
Well, they're called Seraphim. Well, they're, and it's actually in the Bible. Their giants are mentioned in the story of Noah. But yeah.
Because, I mean, I just don't envision Darren Aronofsky making a straightforward.
Oh, no, I don't think he has either. It's just like, what kind of film is he planning?
Yeah, what is, how.
And it's like you said, like you envision it for so long. And it's such a passion thing. And then does it come to fruition?
I'm very interested to see that one. I wouldn't put it at the top of my most anticipated list, but I'm very interested to see how it turns out.
More of a curiosity at this point,
Yeah, I also think what could be 2014's worst film is coming out in the first quarter, which is Winter's Tale. I just hate Akiva Goldsman so much. I just hate his work endlessly. I mean, he has an Oscar for... A Beautiful Mind. I don't think A Beautiful Mind is that great of a screenplay. And let us not forget, he has the credits for Batman and Robin, Angels and Demons, The Da Vinci Code, Cinderella Man. Just really, really poorly written films. And then I saw the trailer for Winter's Tale, and I'm like, what the shit is this? What did you guys think of that trailer?
Meh. That's the easiest way for me to describe that. It's just kind of meh.
I didn't know what was going on, and I didn't want to find out what was going on.
It's really confusing.
It.
It's like already
it,
the.
It's just like, I really like Colin Farrell a lot. I thought he was by far the best part of Saving Mr. Banks.
Well, and it's a book adaptation.
As whimsy dad, drunk alcoholic whimsy dad in Saving Mr. Banks. Oh God. Now, also, it's important to mention that there are some 2013 films that are opening wide. Like Her, which is amazing. So it's not really a 2014 movie, but it kind of is because no one has seen it outside of New York and LA and festivals. So that's good for people to go see that, because that opens wide on January 10th. So that's worth seeing. It's all, there's no order to this podcast whatsoever. This is us literally like, so what else is coming out in 2014? What else? We didn't really, this, like, we could have ordered it, but really it's just like, I don't know. We look at the first quarter, and I think it's easy to look at those because they're in such close proximity, so we've seen a lot of what we know of them. So,
and Summit's trying to launch their next franchise with Divergent, so we'll see how that turns out. They've already announced release dates for the next two movies, but I'm wary to see we saw that happened with Mortal Instruments, but that was a small indie company was like doing it. They were like, we're going ahead with the second one. And then they were like, oh, we can't really afford to because the first movie bombed. But, I mean, Summit's a big studio, and they've already set a February or March start date for the next, no, not that early, but somewhere next spring, I think, is when they want to start filming.
I mean, they're going to hit the ground running, aren't they? What's the second book?
Insurgent.
Isn't that set for next year?
It's slated for 2015, and that script's written, and that's the reason that Shailene Woodley probably won't be back for Spider-Man 3 as Mary Jane, because she'll be filming that this year.
Right. Oh, yeah, there's a Spider-Man movie coming. Like, that's how unexcited. You just reminded me there's another Spider-Man movie coming. Oh, my God, do I not get. I remember when I was really excited for Spider-Man 2. I was so excited for Spider-Man 2. I love the Doc Ock design. I still do. I think it's brilliant. It's a fun movie, but I was really excited. And you just had to remind me that there's another amazing Spider-Man movie on the way, because I was so underwhelmed by the first one. And now
but
it
I'm
seems.
But I'm encouraged to see what Mark Webb does when he's not chained by the origin story. Like, I want to see.
He's not chained by the origin story, but he's chained by an Ortsy Kurtzman script.
Well, but he's also chained to a villain's kind of origin story in this one, because it looks like they're doing
three origin villain origin stories.
Well, all villain origins, because he's basically bringing everybody out of the woodwork. They're either setting up the foundation for Sinister Six, or like half of them at least are going to feature in this next one. So I'm not really sure what he's going to do with that. We'll see.
It also
that
takes
one too.
All of the stakes away when you reveal that none of the villains die. Like, nothing happens to the villains because there is a Sinister Six movie, so...
Right, unless...
I disagree with that, because, I mean, well, if that was true, then comic books would never have been successful or suspenseful. So I think there's plenty of room to work within the supporting characters with that, especially people that know the Spider-Man sort of comic book character arcs and the characters that we have had in the first one. I won't say more than that, but I think there's plenty to work with there. It's just, I don't think anybody's really done that with a straight sequel. Like, there's always the sequel problem of adding just too many villains, and he looks like he's going right for it out of the gates. So that's kind of a big gamble, I think. And it seems like they're trying to build a world around this in the Spider-Man universe, like they're doing with X-Men, and like they've obviously done with the Marvel universe. So I just don't know how that's going to turn out for them.
I just think you spread yourself too thin when you have too many villains. I mean, we saw this in Spider-Man 3. Who is the villain of that? You have Sandman, you have Venom, and then you have second Green Goblin.
The only good thing about that going forward, if they're trying to actually build the universe, is to maybe incorporate some new heroes to help Spidey out. Not new heroes, just bring them in from the universe, to bring in allies.
So you'd bring in Black Cat, and you'd bring in...
And who else does Fox, or does Sony own?
They own everyone. I mean, Spider-Man has a huge cast of characters, but... I mean, it's really their villain. He has a great rogues gallery. As far as, like, people that could help him, he has Black Cat and...
See, that's the thing. Like, in the Marvel, in the history of the comic books, he's always had, like, sort of these cross-pollinations with other Marvel heroes. Like, Daredevil, obviously, the Avengers
exactly.
for a while. Even, you know, like, Wolverine and stuff for a while. But you can't do that because the cinematic universe is set up and they're all legally divided amongst themselves. So that... is the biggest curiosity for me, is what they're going to get Spidey to help him out. Now, maybe it'll just be Spidey himself. Maybe we'll see a return of the symbiote, and we'll see a return to the black Spider-Man suit, and that'll superpower him. I have no idea. But, yeah, it's a big gamble. So that'll be a curiosity in opening early May. May is, like, loaded, by the way, with just the big budget movies.
I mean, May is always loaded because it's before, like, fatigue can set in, because by the time you get to August... And I think that's a bit of a gamble on Marvel's part, because like Guardians of the Galaxy, it's basically, at that point, it's trust the Marvel brand.
Yeah,
it is
definitely.
Really a test of the brand, because A, people are going to be exhausted from blockbusters, and B, no one knows any of the fucking characters in that movie.
Right.
Like, they're going to have to sell it like crazy. And I mean, it's still, I mean, I'm excited for it, but Adam and I saw what was at Comic-Con. No one has seen that yet. They've only seen like the Thor post-credit scene, which kind of elicits a,
yeah,
who is that guy?
That is so weird. Which is,
yeah, very strange.
Right, that's the right... Well, it's coming the month after Jupiter Ascending, which looks even stranger, which I'm excited for. But
yeah.
It's just
I'm excited for, but I'm...
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely looks crazy, but it's the Wachowski siblings. What
yeah,
were you...
Making
what is...
no effort to kind of, like, smooth things over or make it, like, clear for general audience goers. It's like, here's the crazy. You want in? Like, you want to come see the crazy? We're not going to try and make this good.
I mean, really, on the trailer, they put from the creators of the Matrix trilogy, and it really looks like they should have put from the creators of the Matrix trilogy and Speed Racer. Because, really, that's that Speed Racer kind of, yeah, it's a summer tent pole, but it's our summer tent pole, which is you're not like, yeah, it's ostensibly an action film, just like Speed Racer is ostensibly a, you know, action racing film. But Speed Racer is kind of like a crazy hybrid action racing business anime family drama. Like, it's just this crazy mishmash that works. And I'm excited for Jupiter Ascending, but just because I'm a Wachowski fan,
yeah,
except of, you know, Matrix Revolutions, which is just a punch to the face. I just think that one got way away from them.
Well, I think the most pleasantly surprising entry, or the thing that looks like that I thought was going to be crap, but that looks good for this summer, is Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt, which looks really good.
All you
good.
Need is kill.
Yeah, and like Doug Liman, like, all right, like he hasn't, like, everyone remembers Jumper, so like why I had no faith in
everyone remembers Jumper?
Everyone remembers how terrible Jumper was.
Sure do.
I just thought no one remembered Jumper,
just
period.
Jump, David.
I'm amazed you guys remember Jumper. I'm just like, he did the bad Bourne Identity, which wasn't very good. He did Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is fine, except it doesn't have a third act. Swingers is No,
Yeah, he did Swingers.
Yeah, Swingers is good. Go is good. But those are like indie films.
Yeah.
You know, indie comedies.
But this
action
is really cool, and it has Bill Paxton, which I think is that's the key. That's the cherry.
It has, for Adam, it has Paxton power.
Yes, exactly.
Two Guns is amazing for Adam because it has Paxton power.
I watched it on a plane, and I was like, this is totally worth it for Paxton.
It is. Two Guns is totally worth it if you're stuck on a plane.
Yeah, it's fine. Perfectly fine.
Yeah. I think being on a plane really helps boost movies. Like RIPD, I think I would have really disliked it more if I had just taken time to go to a screening and da-da-da. I was trapped on a metal tube on my way to London. I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do this thing. not that bad. Now, that being said, how do you know made me want to just walk off the plane. Granted, I could have stopped the film, but it was...
That's such a weird movie. And I love James L. Brooks, but it's...
James L. Brooks is great. That movie felt like he forgot how people talk.
It's very strange.
Just so bad. Back to 2014. Fun tangent.
Another weird thing is, and you guys can probably correct me on this, but I know The Conjuring did really well last summer. I don't know if horror movies are a staple of the summer, but this year they've got The Purge 2 in June and Deliver Us from Evil in July, which is from the same team behind Sinister, which I thought was really good.
They're just weird anymore. I don't know. They're hard to predict. Like Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones, which was the only new wide release that came out this weekend. I mean, it did well as far as box office to budget ratio, because it basically tripled, almost quadrupled.
Because Paranormal Activity movies cost $5 to make.
Yeah, so I mean, a budget of $5 million, whatever, and then it brought in about 18. Still not enough for the top spot, but I mean, it's a horror movie opening in the first weekend of January, so that's fine.
And that's going to be a regular. That's going to be a regular thing from now on, because like what,
The Devil Inside. That was
the one one that didn't have an ending.
It had like a 90% drop from weekend one to weekend
two. Has everyone realized, wait, I have to go to a website to finish the fucking movie? Are you kidding me?
But I think it's strange that there, or maybe it's not strange, I don't know. Are horror movies, usually the summers are like big splashy tent poles and big comedies now since like we've got like 22 Jump Street and Tammy and stuff, but they're throwing in these. Deliver Us from Evil is, I believe, a Blumhouse production, so that's a smaller scale, like not super high budget. And then The Purge 2 obviously is a tiny budget, which I mean, because The Conjuring did crazy business last summer.
Yeah, I think if they just throw them in there to break up the monotony of the bigger budget kind of blockbuster spectacle movies, then maybe that's what people want to go see. Or just their marketing has been really good too, just to get people interested and just being like, yeah, I want to go check out a scary movie. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be fine. They'll probably do way more than they ever should, which is just their
it's all about timing, man. Release dates are important. It's such a stupid thing when you stop to think about, like, all this time from a guy with an idea for a screenplay, and you know, they spend millions and millions of dollars on to make the film and then to market the film, and then it just, ah, shit, we opened it against such and such. Fuck. Like, I mean, really, just this, and I mean, that's what one of the reasons they set these dates so far in advance, so they can just stake out their territory.
Well, that was funny to see Warcraft stake out in December, and then Star Wars announced, and it was like, shit, we gotta move.
Fuck it. Move it to March, boys.
Oh, yeah, they had no choice. It's like, because Warcraft had staked that out months before, and it's just kind of like, Disney's like, nope. we're taking this month. And they're like, ah, shit. We were first,
it's a nice date you got here. It's a nice date. Yeah. Mind if I take it? Yeah, sure. I got orcs. How nice for you. Fuck off to 2016. Which, by the way, is probably the smart move at this point.
Oh,
rather
yeah.
than try to move it up, just get out. Get out of 2015.
Do not put anything else in 2015.
And yet they will. I mean, look, Fast and Furious, you didn't really have a choice anymore. That was supposed to be this year, and you had to do it. So they did. Although, I don't know, if things had gone on, if things had stayed as scheduled, if Paul Walker didn't die and they had released everything as planned, do you think they would have gotten Fast 8 out in time for 2015? Do you think they could have turned it around as quickly from 6 to 7?
I don't know. I think that would have been their plan, because I mean that's why Justin Lin left in the first place. Because after Fast 6, they were like, all right, we want Fast 7 next year. And he was like, fuck that.
He's like, no, I've had enough of Fast Car.
I'm ready for you in a year, so no thanks.
Well, were they talking about filming those, the next two, sort of at the same time? Just doing a larger production process and then
there were
trying
rumors,
to save time
but
that
there
way.
Was nothing official that they were going to do that. They were
well,
basically
now that whole plan is shot anyway. Yeah.
Basically, it was just Fast 5 and Fast 6. Fast 5 made a ton of money, and they were like, oh, cool, let's try and recapture that with Fast 6. And it made a ton of money, and they were like, all right, we got something here. Like, people are going to turn out. Let's get these as fast as possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people will definitely turn out in 2015 for it. I mean, that's the thing. 2015 is so crowded, but is there anything, like, to me, fuck it. Let's do it. Let's jump it at 2015. Like, there's blockbusters.
We have half an entire year left to go through.
I know, right? But, like, there's film, like, people are going to show up for The Avengers. They're going to show up for Ted 2. They're going to show up for, they're going to show up for Fast and Furious 7. But are they, is Cinderella sure thing? No. Is Mad Max a sure thing? Fuck no. Is, Ant-Man, no. Fantastic Four, I mean, that's the thing. Terminator, those films have been dropping off. People grow wary of all these reasons. Like, didn't we just see a Terminator film? And why? And I mean, Terminator gets super confusing because of all the time travel shit.
But that's what we said about Spider-Man, and Amazing Spider-Man made a ton of money. Like that.
It made a ton of money, but it didn't. It did not blow up the world like they wanted it to. They didn't. It didn't.
I think they're pretty happy with it.
They're happy with it, but
it did.
Oh, God, I'm so sick of worldwide numbers. The world doesn't know shit, Adam.
But that's what's
important, though. That's all studios.
I know it's the important thing. I'm just saying.
When you're running a studio and you're trying to make money.
I'm sorry. I didn't answer to the man, Adam. Fucking sellout.
Like all the money.
It made $752 million worldwide.
There you go.
The Amazing Spider-Man did.
Oh, God, help us.
65% of its gross from foreign.
That's true. It is a well, that's the interesting thing, though, about Amazing Spider-Man. So the character Spider-Man is well-recognized, but could you sell all his villains? Because that's the future of Spider-Man.
Well, and I don't understand.
Villains.
Explain this to me, because I haven't read the comics. What is the plot of Sinister Six? Like, how is there... Are the villains fighting the villains? Like, what is...
Nope. It's six villains that team up to kill Spider-Man. The end.
But there's no Spider-Man. Like, Garfield is done after three, and he sounded pretty much like he's...
Oh, how do you do a Sinister Six movie without Spider-Man?
Yeah, because that's what he said in the interview.
I don't know. They go out for drinks afterwards or shit. I don't know. Like, that's the thing. No, you're absolutely right. How do you do a... Yeah. Well, that's
you
the most villain...
Drew Goddard to write and direct it, and then everyone will show up, because I have faith in Drew Goddard.
I have faith in Drew Goddard, but to me, it's like the way you would have to do it is basically a deconstruction of superhero films. Because that's the thing. Superheroes are defined by their villains. But villains need the heroes. Like, they need each other just as much. You have villains wandering around on their own. Yeah, that can sort of be like Mega Mind. Like, it can kind of be a funny thing, but it's not a real movie. It's like, it doesn't really... Not to say Mega Mind isn't a real movie, but as far as what we've come to expect from superhero films, and that's what I'm saying with Drew Goddard, yeah, he's sort of... And again, this is... Gosh, when the fuck does that movie even come out?
2016 or 17, I think.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, exactly. So super far down the line. But from where we're standing now in comfortable 2014, the only way I can see this working is if you deconstruct the superhero genre, except all the Spider-Man movies are going to play it straight. There's not going to be any super deviation. This is basically just a new Spider-Man. I mean, I don't see any radical reinvention here other than the rights were going to elapse. Sam Raimi was taking too long. Right. We didn't like where he was going with it. Let's just start over. That's all it is. That's all this Spider-Man is. And I like Mark Webb. I like Andrew Garfield. I'm hoping that Amazing Spider-Man 2 rights the ship, but I don't know if it will. I've talked to some people who like, and some people just really did not like the trailer at all. I thought the trailer was fine. They're like, this looks stupid. I'm like, okay.
I just hope there's enough time for the Peter Gwynn stuff, because that was by far the best part of the first movie, and that's where Mark Webb excels, is those small character moments. And I hope there's more of that. I hope it's not.
And it's tough
electrifying everything.
Well, that's how I describe the first.
That's
one,
the thing when you have three villains in there, though,
with superhero elements. It was way more of that than just like a straight superhero movie. So this one, I don't know. It seems like they're going.
You
back
have
to
three
kind of,
villains. Three yeah, villains. Where do you have time for romance?
Yeah.
You gotta, because then you also have to introduce Harry Osborn. strike up that relationship. Mm-hmm. Now, the Rhino is just like a, he's filler. To me, like, that's it. He's just like a guy off to the side, so you don't
Why
really
do you get
have to
Giamatti
worry
for that, though?
Cause he's
yeah, you would absolutely get Giamatti for that.
Oh, has he? Okay.
Yeah, he wanted to play that. Yeah, that
but
they didn't have.
I think it all plays into their plans because he said that he and like we saw in the trailers, like Rhino is like his first villain, or maybe it was at the Comic-Con footage. Like that's the opening of the movie is like him
right.
getting the Rhino. So I think it's kind of like introducing him, putting him in their back pocket for the
well,
rest of the franchise.
Getting him, but then I think bringing him back later in the film because
sure, yeah.
we saw the set photos of him in the rig, and then in the new trailers we've seen him in the sort of the Rhino suit, the mecha Rhino.
I'm just interested to see how Andrew Garfield's Peter Parker fits into this larger Sony thing because Garfield's a really good actor and he hit big with Social Network, but he's taken time off to do Death of a Salesman. Like he hasn't done a lot of films in between and I don't see him. He signed on for 3 Spider-Man films and he said in that interview the 4th one has nothing to do with me, and which would be Sinister 6. But I'm interested to see if he will sign on to come back for more movies after 3 or if he's, you know, kind of ready to hang it up and like do they recast Spider-Man? What do they do after that?
Did he say the 4th one has nothing to do with me or nothing to do with Spider-Man? Because
those are
very different things.
He said the 4th one has nothing to do with me. Like he said, I'm signed on for 3, but the 4th one has nothing.
Yeah, so if they make The Amazing Spider-Man 4, which they have scheduled, he is not, his contract is, he's not contracted.
So you either recast it or you do like the comics.
Or you drive a dump truck of money up to his home.
Or that. Or it's not Peter Parker anymore. It's somebody else.
Yeah, you do the Miles Morales thing that they've done in, I mean, they would never do that, but that would be cool. Like in Ultimate Spider-Man, for people who don't know, they have a new Spider-Man, and his name is Miles Morales. So, spoiler.
So, I mean, they could just completely recast Peter Parker. They could just give Garfield a shitload of money, or they could just rewrite Peter Parker out in favor of another character that's been in the comics, which would be interesting. So we'll see. That'll be what, 2017?
2018.
Okay, we gotta scale. We gotta scale this shit back. We just
we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to get to first.
We do indeed. I have another Marvel property I still want to talk about because we only glancingly mentioned it. But if we want to talk about TMNT power,
what do you want to talk about, Marvel? What?
Well, we only glanced on off Captain America, and I'm really, really, really looking forward to that one because I think it's going to be different from what they've done with sort of the rest of the universe so far. I think they're going to take a lot more from the comics than maybe people expect. And from what I've heard, there's something that occurs in this Captain America sequel that really shakes up the whole Marvel universe. So even just looking forward to the other movies like we've been talking about, the other Marvel movies, this has to come first because whatever happens in this is going to have repercussions felt throughout the rest of the films. And obviously they already know what it is because they've already filmed or are filming the film.
I think I know what you're talking about and I think it's even in the trailer. But
there are shades of meaning and stuff there that I think is pretty heavily laid on, so it should be easy to pick up for the most part. The question is how far they're willing to go for it and with it and what those repercussions are at the end of the day. That's what I'm really, really interested in seeing. And plus the tone of this one too is kind of a throwback to like a 70s spy thriller
kind
of thing, which is really cool to begin with and very different from anything we've seen so far. So definitely looking forward to this one to see how it all plays out. It'll obviously
Absolutely.
Do well, but
yeah, I mean, honestly, it feels like it's like an early summer to get that, which I'm fine with. I'm excited for it. But actually there is a third Marvel film in 2014.
Yep.
And it's Big Hero 6.
That is correct.
Which I know nothing about.
I don't think anybody does, really.
It's okay. I can wait. It's not until November. But
Pixar doesn't have shit, so that's Disney's.
Pixar don't got shit.
Well, Big Hero 6 just landed a new co-director, too. The name of Chris Williams. I'm just looking up. He's the director of Bolt. So
Bolt
is just
cute.
Had him come on for
you.
Whatever that means.
Nope, doesn't mean anything. But also, yeah, we're talking about it's a really underwhelming year, but there is a new Christopher Nolan movie, and it's not a Batman movie, so I'm interested. I mean, I'm hoping that Interstellar is that kind of thing that lets him do his thing,
yeah.
Like Inception did. And Interstellar has corn, so there you go.
Sure
well,
that, the plot is revolves around corn.
You metalheads out there. I don't think it features corn the band. Sorry.
Nothing featured. Fucking bar mitzvahs don't feature Korn the band anymore.
Is that a thing?
Can you get Korn to do your bar mitzvah?
Is that no, there's
not
a
anymore.
Christian band now. They're a Christian band now.
Oh, get the fuck out.
No, yeah. Just the one guy. Just look the one up. Guy. Christian.
Oh, is it? Oh, I thought yeah, they were a Christian band.
No, the one guy.
I thought that would be exciting.
That I was excited for all of 5 seconds until Dave was like, no, it's just the one guy. Well, fuck that.
No, whenever I write up Interstellar, I'm going to be typing Korn with a K. Like, it's with Korn.
That's my plan. All
Korn is in Interstellar.
I completely am for that typo. I am absolutely behind it. I won't correct it. Yeah. I will celebrate it. You know, but we got our, you know, we also have our comedy sequels. We got Dumb and Dumber 2. Mm-hmm. That's been in development for a while. And on the one hand, I want it. And then on the other hand, I'm like, most of the Farrelly Brothers movies for over a decade have been bad. I mean, I like the Three Stooges for what it is, which is as a kid's film, it's not bad. Certainly not the abomination it looked like it would be. But I mean, Hall Pass is terrible. Heartbreak Kid is fucking awful. I mean, even like, you know, Stuck on You is it's like they've been off for a while. And so for them to like jump back in for Dumb and Dumber 2, great idea, but I don't know. I'm very wary of it.
Yeah, well, we've got an original comedy coming up with, oh my lord, just forgot.
Neighbors?
Seth MacFarlane. It's A Million Ways to
Die. Oh, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Coming out in May, too.
That's interesting because he stars in it, and I don't know how he can handle leading a movie like that.
How he can perform when he's not in the form of a teddy bear?
Well, Western comedy is tricky, like, already, but then you throw in Seth MacFarlane making his acting debut, which I guess he was in a mocap suit for Ted. I know that, but we never really saw his face or anything, so that should be interesting. But Liam Neeson plays a gunslinger, so I mean, it's gonna be fun. We'll see that.
Yeah, and the thing is even if it flops, he has Ted too. Like, there's no, it's not, he can't lose. This is a free one
yeah,
for him, basically. So yeah. To me, and it's like, it's free in the sense that he probably had a lot of freedom to do it because he's like, and because I'm doing Ted 2 for you, Universal, so give me what I want.
Yeah.
And they did. And I imagine like the budget for it probably wasn't astronomical either.
Probably not.
So that. Right.
We should see a trailer soon. I think that's like the only first quarter movie that we haven't seen a trailer for or anything.
Now, you know what Universal...
That comes out in May, though, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but Universal has been plugging Neighbors like crazy, and that doesn't come out till May. They were plugging that since November.
Yeah.
At least. And it looks really funny. I'm excited for it, so there's that.
I like Nick Stoller, even though his movies are very, very long.
Oh, yeah, they are long. They are very, yeah. They
well,
are.
And then Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's follow up to This Is the End, The Interview, comes out in October.
Oh, right.
So that should be
yeah.
fun.
And we've got Ben Stiller closing out the year for us again. Yay. Yay.
Well,
I really need a cricket sound effect to throw in.
Please
here.
Add it in because, well, I don't know. Night at the Museum, I guess it's been fairly popular. I don't know why.
Oh, I mean, those movies are huge successes. I just don't give a shit about them because they're not any good.
Well,
and with that, he angered the huge contingent of night. This is, I'm so glad that so many of our readers don't listen to the podcast. Like, I want more readers, but I imagine if, like, commenters, like, I like Night at the Museum. They're enjoyable movies. I don't know. It's not a very popular, it's very anti-populist, I would say.
Well,
to
Sean
say
Levy
I don't
has,
like...
he has that in December, but then he has his first dramatic film in September, which is This Is Where I Leave You, which I've heard is a fantastic book, and I'm interested to see how that turns out. Because it's got a good cast, but...
It does have a good cast, and I just... Ooh, Sean Levy. You know what would be funny? If he was better at comedy, if he was better at dramas than comedies. Like, he had no idea how to tell a joke, but he can do drama with the best. That would actually be an amazing surprise. Like, The Internship is a horrible film, but This Is Where I Leave You is fantastic. That would be surprising.
Well, it's back-to-back, because October is David Dobkin's, like, dramatic debut with The Judge. David Dobkin did Wedding Crashers and
The Change-Up.
And The Change-Up. And he's doing The Judge, which is Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall. It's more of a dramedy, I guess, but they're both dramedies. This Is Where I Leave You and The Judge. So it'll be interesting to see how they fare.
Right, and they both got good casts. And
yeah.
I mean, that October date is sort of like, maybe we can sneak it in there for... possibly some awards consideration.
There's like nothing in October right now either, so.
Gone Girl.
Gone Girl.
Dracula Untold, guys. Come on.
Yeah, Gone Girl to me is like that. Yeah, I'm sorry, Dave. Dracula should remain untold. Man, Dracula, talk about and starring Luke Evans, who I feel is being forced on us. Maybe it'll be like a Colin Farrell thing, where like I don't know if you remember, like back in 2005, like Colin Farrell was in everything, but he hadn't really done anything to support it, and he just kept showing up, and it's like this guy isn't that good. Like, okay, he's in The Recruit and Phone Booth and all the, you know, it's like why are you here, you know? Or 2003, really, it was around 2003. So then like Daredevil, he's the bad guy, and he didn't really make an impression. I don't think he really sort of cemented himself as like someone to who was really good. Like, I don't think he found himself as an actor until In Bruges, and from then on he's been really confident and a really strong point in films. So maybe Luke Evans will have that kind of turnaround, but so far it's like you're a handsome guy who's in movies. Like Immortals, no impression. The Hobbit, nothing. He's been in other, like, wasn't he in like Clash of the Titans, possibly? Wasn't he in one of those?
That was Sam Worthington, who's basically the same person.
No, no, no. Not Sam Worthington. Like, no, no, no. He had, you know, like all the guys who were with him, like Mads Mikkelsen, and he was in Clash. Like that little brigade of like people who all just get killed by Medusa in that one scene.
I mean, if you want to, you know.
Oh, he was Apollo.
Bring him down to the
I thought he was. Oh, he's Apollo. No, he's Apollo in Clash and fucking Zeus in Immortals.
Yeah, so he
he's a Greek god. That's what I think of when I think of Luke Evans. And now he's Dracula.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the Raven, which nobody saw. Again, so maybe they're gonna keep trying to make Luke Evans happen.
Of course, they're trying to make him happen because he's the fucking crow. Hello.
He's the crow. And he was, was Fast and Furious 6 memorable because of its villain?
Super memorable.
Oh, I completely forgot he was in that.
There you go.
Literally forgot he was in that movie.
I think I've made my Luke Evans point.
That makes me so sad for the crow, though. So sad.
Were you a super fan of the crow?
I'm a big fan of the original. I've also watched all the sequels that came after, and they're all horseshit. So
Edward Furlong's really not a good crow.
Here it is.
Edward Furlong doesn't sell it as the crow.
Oh, Eddie Furlong.
That project.
Your flock of seagulls haircut.
The Crow remake is on like its sixth choice director and like eighth choice actor.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope it just keeps. I hope that one keeps getting put.
Is that in 2015? I hope it's in 2015.
I don't think it has a date at this point.
It should be in 2015. Yeah. It'll kill it in 2015.
Might as well.
Maybe Fury might be good.
Yeah.
I like the idea. I like World War II films, and he's actually been in the military, so that helps.
Yeah. Oh, and I like that it's an original story.
It is an original story. Any original story that we can
yes.
just latch onto.
Well it's
just
that like I think original war stories.
Well, I think it's cool that he just like this isn't based on a specific battle or anything. He just sat down and like I'm gonna make a World War II picture with tanks. Like I'm really interested to see what that is, because like Monuments Men is based on like a book and like actual events and like actual people and stuff like that. But I think for Fury, he just sat down and he was like, I'm gonna write a movie set in World War II with tanks.
Yeah, I don't know how much he
works for me
based on things on like actual maneuvers or famous battles or things like that. So that'll be interesting.
So, going back, and like, you know, for our listeners, this is, and we'll just cut it off at some point, because we really could just go on and on about 2014, because it's an entire year. But one thing I do want to circle back to, because I've just been looking at the calendar this whole time we've been talking, and I want to go back to the first quarter, and I could not be less excited for Muppets Most Wanted. Even though I really liked the Muppets, it's the same director. I look at all the trailers, and I'm like, really? This is another Muppets movie, and I got nothing.
I didn't love the first movie, so I didn't.
I've never been a big fan in general.
Okay, so. Really? Okay, so it's just me being completely underwhelmed for the sequel to a movie I really liked.
I'm
got
amazed
it.
You guys haven't mentioned How to Train Your Dragon 2. I'm surprised we haven't talked about that yet. Coming out.
That's a given. Yeah. That's in the top five most anticipated of the year.
Yeah, and we should do our most anticipated. What's everybody looking forward to?
Oh, of the year?
Yeah. Number one, because I remember we did this last
of,
year. We also did box office predictions. Yeah.
We did box office predictions?
Who said Iron Man 3?
Nobody,
that
I don't think.
One of us had to say Iron Man 3.
No, I think me and Matt said Star Trek, and I think Adam said Hunger Games, who was pretty close.
Yeah. Hunger Games is 2 million away from toppling Iron Man 3.
You could go back, but I'm pretty sure.
You could do it, Adam. You could do it, just if it hangs in there.
But we have to sit down and we have to do it for this year now, so we can come back.
Ah, shit. So what's the biggest? So what's the biggest movie? Oh, I know what the biggest movie is. You know what? I'll put my money down. I'll put my money down on Transformers.
You're not putting it on The Legend of Hercules starring Kellan Lutz next week.
Damn it, Lutz.
Blimpy.
30 Rock saved one of its greatest jokes for its series finale, and it was so good.
Oh, God. You know, two products that have been destroyed by season finales are... by the way, if you haven't seen the ending of Breaking Bad, stop listening for 15 seconds. Our Blimpies and Stevia have been completely destroyed by finales. Because I was at the supermarket and I was looking at artificial sweeteners and I'm like, I'm not going with that one. Nope, too risky. Too risky.
No Stevia.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Hunger Games is going to have a top box office again this year, Adam. Even though they weren't quite top.
I think it's possible. There's not... Well, Interstellar. I mean, Inception was huge. I think
it was huge. Well, see, and that's the other thing. Like, as you move towards the year, like, how do you count things? Like, because in May, you know, you have so much time for it to accumulate, and in November...
Yeah, I'm not sure how it counts. I'm not sure what you...
Like, I would count it towards the year it comes out. It goes towards that year's success. So... Hunger Games could be the biggest movie of 2013 if it outpaces.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's the advantage it has. When you come out that late in the year, you get to take advantage of a completely dead January. And you get to take advantage of, like, that's what Frozen is doing right now. Frozen is killing it.
Nothing else out there.
Right. And also, it's a good movie, so it has that going for it.
Well, Disney's got Maleficent coming out this year, too.
And that was supposed to come out in March, and then they're like, they kicked it to May, and I don't know if that's another sign that, man, it's really fucking slow out there. I didn't even know that there was a movie called Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return. Someone brought this up to me.
It's an independently produced animated movie that's been in development for like 6 years.
Oh, that movie. Yeah. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Is that the one? That's the one with, Lea Michele and Patrick Stewart. Oh, that fucking movie. Yeah, okay.
Well, there's a bunch of movies that haven't been dated yet, like Hot Tub Time Machine 2, Foxcatcher's coming out, Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice.
Inherent Vice. Yeah, that's the whole thing. And that's what I was saying at the beginning of the show. There's so many movies that we don't have exact dates for yet. We know they're in 2014, but we can't... I don't know. I don't want to say it for sure. We do. They probably will be, but I'm not talking about them just yet. Just because... Also, we haven't seen anything from them. We haven't seen a trailer.
Yeah.
We don't know that much. And obviously, a Paul Thomas Anderson film. We did see a trailer for Foxcatcher for all of 3 hours, and that looked great. So, and it's Bennett Miller. So, yeah, those are most anticipated. But I'm just thinking ahead to, like, if you have a date, what can I count down to?
Yeah.
That's sort of my thinking.
Ridley Scott's back with the biblical epic.
Yeah, it's the year of the Bible.
Handsome mode. Wait, Exodus, Noah, and what's the other one?
It's that cut-down theatrical release, Son of God, from the, what was that, History Channel's miniseries. They're like,
oh,
shit,
is that
people
what that
love
is?
This. Yeah,
I couldn't figure out what that was.
They basically took whatever this 12 hours or 13 hours it was from the Bible series. They're cutting the 2 hours or so out just on Jesus and dropping that as a theatrical release.
They should just re-release The Passion of the Christ and just make people angry again.
This one stars Hot Jesus, so.
Hot Jesus.
Yeah, Hot Jesus.
Oh my God, I have to look this up right now because this is one of the most amazing things. I was talking to a friend of mine, and his grandmother is pretty religious. So there, she watched I'm in Love with a Church Girl.
Oh no!
And starring Ja Rule and Michael Madsen and Stephen Baldwin. All right. You know who one of the executive producers on I Fell in Love with a Church Girl?
Jordan Belfort.
God.
Oh, nice.
Really?
I'm glad he popped in.
God is credited as an executive producer on I'm in Love with a Church Girl.
I mean, I know he's busy, but
that's nice. So top that, all other religious movies. Is God backing your film? I don't know. You know, it also has, Exodus, yeah, Ridley Scott, it's sort of, I've learned to sort of be wary. It sometimes feels like Lucy in the football with him. And it just feels like really like Fox's marketing department just really knows how to fire on all cylinders when they're pushing his movies. Like for The Counselor, it looked really interesting, and Prometheus looked really interesting, and I'm sure Exodus will probably look pretty good. Fox knows how to market films. Yeah. I'll give them that. And then there again, like April, it always feels obvious like summer gets early and earlier. I still mark it at the first weekend in May. But seriously, look at April. You have Captain America and you have Transcendence.
Yep. And Earth to Echo, which might be a little surprise. It might be a nice little surprise in the early goings.
Sure.
That one looks interesting to me.
Yeah. Of course, people should really keep an eye out for Dom Hemingway in April because it's amazing and they should totally see it. I'm actually going to import that from because it already opened in the UK. I'm just going to import it because I can't wait to see it again and I just want to own it.
People should also catch Blended in May with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore.
Should
Blended?
They, Adam,
should they? Should they?
Adam, people don't understand sarcasm sometimes, so please, I don't want you to lead them astray.
From Frank Karachi, who Terry also worked, who also
that trailer did make me chuckle.
He makes me laugh no matter what, though. I...
From the director of Here Comes the Boom, Zookeeper, and Click comes Blended. From Warner Brothers Pictures on May 23rd. Oh, goodness.
Well, it's opening up against X-Men 2. Good luck.
It's opening up against X-Men 2.
We shall see.
Yeah, that
nice counter-punching, though.
It is, yeah, a good counter. Oh, Adam, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned this one yet. Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah, I'm very, very much looking forward to that. I love that book. I like Shailene Woodley a lot. I don't know, I have not seen Josh Boone's directorial debut, so I don't know anything about the director or the take, but I'm very interested in this one because it's a book that I really, really liked, and it's a really emotional and sweet story and something you don't see in a lot of movies. I really like the fact that they like kept... For those who don't know, it's a love story between two cancer patients who meet in a cancer support group. And I was worried that in the movies they would glam the girl up, but they've kept her because she carries around an oxygen tube with her the whole time, has tubes in her nose. And from the poster and the only image we've seen, she's keeping that. So I like that they're not kind of like shying away from it.
Yeah, and for those who think that sounds kind of mawkish, I would say. I read the book
awful,
as well.
It
sounds awful, but like the book has enough bite to it and enough like it really is keeps you like it has just enough anger and being pissed off as a barrier to make it feel authentic rather than cloying or manipulative. I still have issues with the book. I don't think I liked it as much as Adam, but I think it could still make a good movie, and I'm also a fan of Shailene Woodley, so I mean that's a June release, so you got a little kind of small. That's one of those. That's a small film that falls right in there between Edge of Tomorrow, 22 Jump Street, How to Train Your Dragon 2, and then of course your May releases that are still holding over.
Clint Eastwood's
X-Men.
Musical spectacular Jersey Boys.
Oh, gosh, I wonder, can you do a musical and only shoot everything in one take? That's
all in like silver scale, like muted color tones.
Adam, it sounds like you think he's the wrong choice for Jersey Boys.
I was really looking forward to seeing Jon Favreau do Jersey Boys, but no.
But Clint now you get, and Clint Eastwood, who's apparently just like, I was going to do a Stars, I'm not even going to try. I was going to do a Stars Born. I'm not going to do a Clint Eastwood impression. I was going to do a Stars Born. Let's not, because I feel like he'll come to my house and punch me just for doing a shitty impression of him. He was going to do A Star Is Born, and then that fell through when Beyonce got pregnant. And I guess he was just like, well, I want to do another musical, so
yeah,
I'm going to do another musical.
I'll be interested to see it. It doesn't feel like his material. I've seen the state musical, and it's really fun and entertaining, and they say fuck a lot. But be interesting to see how Clint Eastwood does a musical. Because it's entertaining. It's
Hey, he did play Misty. Clint Eastwood has a very diverse directing filmography. Let's
sure.
give him that.
But
when
I was writing up the first image, I looked at his filmography, and it's been over a decade since he's done something that wasn't a dour, dark drama. Like, he did Space Cowboys in the late 90s, but everything else was Mystic River, Million Dollar Baby, here in Vegas.
I mean, definitely, like, yeah, there's definitely a lot of...
J. Edgar.
I mean, the Bridges of...
Movie
yeah, no,
J. Edgar.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of... It's basically, I don't know, Invictus is uplifting. Invictus is
kind of, but
one
you
of the...
know what the hell's going on because he doesn't explain.
Oh, yeah, because no one understands how fucking rugby is played. But yeah, no. I mean, but even on that basic level, you're like, well, if the team wins, South Africa is saved. That's that was my understanding. for the Springboks. Yeah, I didn't understand how rugby is played, but I just knew that if the Springboks win, then that's good for the country, and Nelson Mandela really cares a lot about rugby. That was my takeaway from Invictus. But as far as like a film that, you know, you don't want to slit your wrists open after, yeah, sure. There you go. So, but you're right, Adam. Jersey Boys is way brighter than everything. So, all right, people, we've hit basically the hour mark in our show, and we're just going to cut it off because we really could just go on and on and on. But yeah, okay. But before we move on to recommendations, let's place our bets. So, Adam, what do you think is going to be the highest grossing film of 2014?
I'm going to go with Mockingjay. And that Mocking. Also, my most anticipated film of 2014 is Gone Girl, because it's a new David Fincher film. And I liked the book. I didn't love the book, but it's page-turner, and I'm interested to see what he does with, like, a... It's basically all about, like, fucked-up relationships and love and murder and stuff like that. So it's right in Fincher's wheelhouse.
Okay. Dave, what are you putting your money on, and what's your most anticipated?
I'm going to go with The Hot Hand with Adam. Just... probably The Hunger Games. I don't know if it's going to be between Transformers and Hunger Games, but I'll go Hunger Games again.
All right, I'll play against you guys and go with Transformers. And my most anticipated is probably Lego Movie.
I'm actually looking forward to, I mean, obviously the Marvel movies, but I'm looking at Box Trolls because it's the next one out from Leica, and I really, really enjoyed Paranorman.
Yeah.
I might even recommend that today just from talking about it.
All right, then let's move on to recommendations.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that.
All right, follow your heart, Dave. So you're recommending Paranorman?
Yeah,
tell us about
I'm gonna go with Paranorman. I really have always liked stop motion animation, and Leica is kind of the next sort of cutting edge technologically in that field. They're doing a lot of really cool stuff with 3D printing, to the point that they can get really detailed characters, and there's a lot less limitations from just sort of the hand sculpted, hand painted even. Models that they used to. Now, Paranorman characters are kind of weird looking, and I think that's kind of endearing to the movie itself, because they are definitely very unique, and just within that world themselves, it's very obvious that these are all Paranorman characters. So pretty cool. It was an Oscar-nominated feature. Just came out back in 2012, late summer 2012, so you may have seen or at least heard about it. But it's cool because it's got sort of this, obviously paranormal, it's called Paranorman, story to it, but it's not... by the numbers. There are some interesting changes that take place, either minor things with side characters or within the plot itself. So it's not exactly what you would expect from a typical movie. It's right up there with Nightmare Before Christmas and movies like that. So if you like that sort of, not just the genre, but also stop motion animation, definitely check out Paranorman from Chris Butler and Sam Fell and from Leica Entertainment.
Okay. Adam, what about you?
Since it just went on Netflix Instant Watch, I am recommending writer-director Billy Wilder's 1960 comedy drama, The Apartment. This is a movie that you most definitely need to see. It's funny, it's sweet, it's sad. It's just a masterwork of writing and directing and acting. Jack Lemmon plays kind of like an office drone at a high-rise in New York City, and it opens and it shows him working, and it's one of those old school, the movie was made in 1960, so it's one of those old school offices where just you can see as far back as you can see there were like people at desks typing, just typing furiously and smoking. So it's just one of these really big shots with, you know, he's just a drone, he's just one in a million, and he allows his managers to use his apartment as a place to have their extramarital afternoon delight affairs while, you know, right after work is closed, so they can go to his apartment and use that to take their mistresses out and then go back to their wives. So he's a nice guy, and he doesn't want to get in trouble, and he wants to kind of move up, and he falls for an elevator operator played by Shirley MacLaine, who it turns out is seeing one of his bosses, and it's a romantic comedy, but it's also really dramatic, and it has a lot to say about relationships, and it's Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine are amazing in this movie. It's a little over 2 hours, but it's well worth your time if you haven't seen it. Even if you have seen it, watch it again. It's just great. It's on Netflix Instant Watch now. It just came on the first, I guess.
So I would highly recommend you watch The Apartment.
Okay, and my recommendation will be Zelig, which I saw a couple days ago. I was sort of, the Dissolve has sort of been guiding me on some, Dissolve.com, guiding me on some films I haven't seen. And so I watched Zelig, which is a Woody Allen film that had just completely flown under my radar, and I thought it was great. The plot is sort of a mockumentary done in the style of just a really long newsreel with sort of that, you know, talking about Zelig, you know, and going to thing this. And the plot is Woody Allen plays a guy named Leonard Zelig who basically just copies anyone he's near. It doesn't work with women, but anyone else, no matter what their race or height or size. If he's around fat people, he'll get really fat. If he's around black people, he'll turn black. And he has no real identity. And so Mia Farrow plays a psychologist who tries to help him form his own personality. And he falls for her. And it sort of tracks his development and regression. And it does, you know, and of course it's Woody Allen, so it has, you know, these really funny moments. Like one of the conflicts is that, you know, he thinks, you know, he becomes a worldwide celebrity because of what he can do. He's almost a circus freak. And at one point he becomes a circus freak. And even when he thinks he's found happiness, all these women come out of the woodwork because naturally, he, you know, he married them and he looks different and he thinks he's different. Like, that's the thing. It's not a scam on his part. It's just a psychological disorder. And it's funny, but it's also really interesting because it has this idea of, like, you know, interpretation, being who you want, people see themselves in you, and it's all a mirror. And yet, in these talking head interviews, Allen immediately throws that back at the audience, noting how that criticism would be made, therefore providing a mirror to even the critic of the film. And it's just, it's that kind of Allen at the top of his game, being so smart and incisive and still incredibly funny. There were some lines in Zelig that just had me rolling from how funny they were. So it's a film that I think, at least for me, I had not really considered, because I know, like, Allen's like Manhattan and, you know, Annie Hall and like, you know, he has his majors. But for some reason, Zelig slipped by me. Don't let it slip by you. It's, if you have HBO Go, you can see it that way. Otherwise, find a way to rent it. Although, as we were talking before we started recording, it's really hard to find movies outside of streaming now. Streaming has been both a blessing and a curse. So try to track it down. I have the great Atlanta independent video store, Videodrome. That's where I got it. However you can, try to check it out. Okay, thanks for listening to us to Seriously Rambling. This was just straight up rambling, this episode about 2014, but I had fun. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chitwood.
And Dave?
At Dr. Claw, MD.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.